A study out today finds nearly three-quarters of people who receive public assistance benefits from the government belong to a working family. The report from UC Berkeley says low-wage jobs have left federal and state governments holding the tab for higher Medicaid, food stamp, and child subsidy payouts. Researchers say the cost to taxpayers is $153 billion a year. Ken Jacobs is chair of the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, a co-author of the report. He's with us via Skype. And Ken, your report is essentially saying taxpayers are subsidizing companies that pay low wages.
That's right. When companies pay too little for workers to provide for their families, the workers rely on public assistance programs in order to make ends meet. And that does effectively become a subsidy for low-wage employers.
And is this just about the wages, or is this also about other benefits that they're not getting?
This also includes Medicaid. So it's a combination of low wages and declining job-based health coverage. Over the last 10 years, not only have we seen real wages adjusted for inflation remain flat or go negative for the entire bottom 70% of workers in the United States, but we've also seen the share of non-elderly Americans with health insurance from an employer falling 10 percentage points.
But is that really a surprise? Were these public assistance programs ever designed only to cater to people who were unemployed? Or should it be expected that some people have jobs where they don't make enough money to make ends meet and they don't get the kind of benefits that they need for their families? And of course, we'll have to rely on public assistance.
Well, it's not a surprise. And programs like the Earned Income Tax Credit are created to help low-wage workers. But the reality is, there's good evidence that absent a high minimum wage, what happens is that wages actually go down in response to these public assistance programs. And so employers are gaining that subsidy from the programs. So unless you have other policy supports around it, like a higher minimum wage, then the benefits are going to low-wage workers in the sense that it's helping them get by and make ends meet, but it's also serving as a de facto subsidy for low-wage employers.
You're saying the companies are taking advantage of the fact that these programs exist. They know that, and therefore they can pay their workers less?
Right. The companies can pay their workers less because people have other supports to in order to get by. And they also, in case of the Earned Income Tax Credit, it's drawing other more people into the labor market, which also lowers wages. And that works for the work for the people who get the Earned Income Tax Credit, but single individuals without children don't get EITC and their wages go down.
And we're seeing different responses in different states to this situation. In Connecticut, they're considering a bill that would fine employers who pay too little. And in California, they're going to be posting the names of employers and how much they are costing the state. Is shaming businesses the way to deal with this problem?
Well, a number of states have released that kind of information in the past, and that does help put on pressure. I mean, we have seen recently Walmart announcing that it's going to do a wage increase, albeit a very small one. McDonald's as well, only for a small, very small percentage of their workers. But the public shaming and the public protests have had an impact on what employers do.
And it sounds like what you're saying is the wage increases that we are seeing at places like McDonald's and Walmart are not going to be enough to really make a difference here.
That's right. Those wage increases, again, getting the extra dollar an hour is real for people, but those are very small wage increases. And so what we are seeing now in a lot of the states and in cities around the country is a push to move the minimum wage much higher into a place where it can do more to bring families out of poverty.
What about what we would hear from businesses on this, which is that if they raise their wages, if they boost these benefits that they're giving to these workers, that they'll have to lay people off. They won't be able to employ as many people.
Well, actually, there's a lot of good research evidence on that. And we look at what's happened in response to, say, increases in the minimum wage. We, in fact, haven't seen declines in employment. What we do see is a decline in worker turnover. People are able to stay on their jobs longer. There's better worker performance, less absenteeism, fewer grievances, and better customer service. And that does save firms money. It also means that if all firms raise wages in the same industry at the same time because you've got those kinds of policies, then what you see is a slight increase, a small one-time increase in prices for consumers. And so for a very small one-time increase in prices, you're able to help move large numbers of families into a place where they're better able to survive and support their family members.
Do you see some light at the end of the tunnel here that we're entering an economy in which it's a little more of a worker's market than it has been, that employers are having to raise wages and benefits at least to some degree to attract the people that they want?
The labor market is tightening up, and that as unemployment goes down, and that is increasing wages somewhat, but it's still very low, and we're still – real wages are still well below where they were a decade or even 25 years before. It is very unlikely that we'll see any meaningful change without policy solutions that bring that floor up.
That's Ken Jacobs, the chair of the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education. We'll link you to his report at our website, hereandnow.org. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.